I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 216 for August 17th, 2014 are Kevin Crossman.
Aloha, everyone.
Nathan Trent.
Howdy, everybody.
And Ryan Treichler.
Hey, everybody.
So tonight on this podcast, we're declaring war on classic fantasy land. No, not really. Okay, so what we're doing is applying one of the classic sabermetric concepts. If you follow Moneyball and that whole idea, it grows out of this kind of new field of statistical study called sabermetrics. And we're going to apply one of the classic sabermetric concepts to Walt Disney World's classic Fantasyland attractions. But before we get into that, I do need to thank our podcast sponsor, Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. The next time you're considering a Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney, or even another themed entertainment destination vacation, consider working with a Fairy Tale Journeys travel agent. They'd love to take the headaches off of your plate, deal with the details, and let you focus on the fun. You can check them out at fairytalejourneys.com. All right, so what do I mean when I say, you know, war and sabermetrics? So I was really excited when the idea for this podcast topic kind of started perking around on our message boards, because I'm an old-time sabermetrics fan. The sort of father of sabermetrics is a guy named Bill James, and when he was coming up with these concepts, he was living just up the highway from me in Lawrence, Kansas. So I owned one of the earliest, I think he called it the baseball prospectus back then. But I owned one of the first copies of that was, you know, went through a regular publisher. And basically his idea, one of his ideas that he introduced was this idea of WAR, W-A-R, which stands for Wins Against Replacement. And the idea of Wins Against Replacement is to compare what you have now to the average of what you might replace it with. And it was a concept that he applied to baseball teams. So do you keep the guy who's been playing left field for the last 3 years, or do you replace him? And the way that he suggested we ought to be, you know, making that decision is to say, you know, the left fielder is a known quantity. What's the average of what we might replace him with? And then we can get a relative value for what we've already got. We're going to try and apply that same concept to classic Walt Disney World Fantasyland attractions. Does that make sense, guys? Are we all on board?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yep.
All right. So let's jump right in and jump to, you know, one of those Fantasyland attractions that is at the top of everybody's list. It's a, you know, Fastpass attraction since Fastpass was released, because the line backs up, and that is Peter Pan's Flight. And so I think before we start talking about replacement, we need to talk about the things that make Peter Pan's Flight, you know, the unique classic attraction it is. So, you know, Kevin, why don't you take a stab at talking a little bit about what makes Peter Pan's Flight a classic Fantasyland attraction?
Sure. Well, a lot of these Fantasyland attractions from back when Disneyland started and from when the Magic Kingdom opened were based on a very similar model. You have, they're called dark rides. You're in some sort of moving vehicle that runs on a track, and you go through these different scenes in that are related to a Disney classic film or property. And in the case of Peter Pan, the unique thing here is that it hangs, the track is above you and you're hanging below it in this flying boat rather than in a car or other vehicle. And you see the scenes from the Peter Pan movie take place before your eyes. You fly, you see Peter Pan fighting Captain Hook, and it's very, very popular, as you noted.
All right, so Nate, what makes Peter Pan's Flight a classic attraction to you?
You know, it's always been there. it's always been there. And, you know, the uniqueness of it is, you know, a lot of the scenes you see are actually below you. And I don't know of any other attraction that really does that except for, you know, maybe Soarin'.
Sure. Okay. And so Ryan, when you're evaluating Peter Pan's flight, what would you say in terms of its sort of inherent value? What makes it something that is classic and ought to be, you know, preserved as is?
Well, I mean, I think there's ties to history. So Peter Pan's Flight, I don't believe it was an opening attraction, but it was an early attraction. It's an attraction that a lot of people remember. They have kind of this nostalgia for. And I think, you know, in trying to evaluate it in kind of a war model, I was trying to think of how kind of different criteria. And so positionally, one of the things that I think about a lot of these fantasy lands attractions is that positionally they sit in the spectrum of rides where everyone can ride them. So they kind of throw back to the very, very early Disney mindset of this is a spot where you can spend time having fun with your family, and everybody's included. So, you know, it's not a roller coaster. It's not intense, and so everybody gets to experience it on down to the smallest child. And so I think that that's something that's really important because Fantasyland is kind of the go-to place for little kids. That's where you've got Dumbo. That's where you go when you've got small children. And so the ability to provide an experience to all ages seems really important and seems to be a huge value for that particular attraction.
Okay. All right. So I think you all have described it well. So then the question becomes, you know, what would you imagine the average – you know, again, we're supposed to analyze this against a backdrop of, you know, the average expected replacement. And if you look at what has been coming out of Imagineering over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, I think we've seen some really impressive work. So the question would be, and maybe we get to do a little armchair Imagineering here briefly, you know, what are some things that a replacement attraction, you know, the average replacement to a Peter Pan dark ride might incorporate, you know, given what we've seen from Imagineering recently. All right, Kevin, you want to try?
Well, the interesting thing is that we have a good comparison for a more modern dark ride with the Little Mermaid ride that has gone into Magic Kingdom recently as part of New Fantasyland.
Sure.
And what you see there is a significant increase in the technology in terms of the animatronic figures and other projection effects. Some of the animatronics that have gone into the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, again, you have better animatronics and projection technology to make a more engaging experience. And the interesting thing, I think, for Peter Pan is that they've gotten rid of a lot of these dark rides at Magic Kingdom. Many of them are still available at Disneyland. But, you know, this is one of the few that's basically like it was when it first opened. And, you know, if we're talking plusing, that might be one thing. But if we're talking actual replacement, what would Disney replace this with? You'd probably have to expect a dark ride or something similar based on a more current property like Frozen or Tangled maybe. And I don't know if I would take that trade.
Okay, so there's a risk there, and I think this is one of the things you have to consider when you're considering this sort of wins against replacement model. There's this risk that what you get replaced is you know, not the classic film, right? Is a different property or something more modern. Ryan, any
yeah.
thoughts?
So one of the things that, and this came up on the Blue Sky for Boys podcast, is that you don't have many male heroes, and Peter Pan is a male hero. He's not there in the park, but this is kind of a potentially more boy-centric ride. So it's a little boy ride. So, you know, if you were to go with Tangled or a Frozen, unless it's a Sven or Olaf ride, you're losing a boy attraction. So I I think that that's not necessarily an even trade if you were to get rid of that. I was going back through the cast of characters for what I thought you could put there, and I was looking at kind of updated dark rides, and I looked at Disneyland Paris and thought about maybe the Ratatouille ride there, as that's an updated track system. I think it moves more into the Pooh Honey Hunt, where you have a trackless Omnimover. So that's a little bit newer. You have newer animatronics that are jumping out at you and moving. So something like that seems like it could fit in there. It's a fairly known property. Now it's just not in the U.S., but something like that seems like it could potentially fit in that space.
Well, now, see, I would take a different tack here and say that, you know, I don't think it would necessarily be updated to another property, largely because the Peter Pan property has really held up well. They've continued to re-release the, you know, videos of it. Pixie Hollow is still really popular. You know, the Tinkerbell films did good business for the direct-to-video releases. So I think that, you know, we're safe that Peter Pan would be there. And as long as it's going to be Peter Pan, I think that there are some things that could be done in that attraction along the lines, as Kevin was saying, of, you know, what's been done in dark ride situations in Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and in Little Mermaid to sort of refresh, you know, Peter Pan's Flight without having to completely replace it. And I think that the things that it could really, you know, be added there are, and some cues we can take from that, two big things. One is motion. You know, Peter Pan's Flight, aside from the vehicle moving, is very static. There's not much motion at all. I think there's some good opportunities within the attraction to, you know, make the character components, the dark ride components, move a bit and liven the attraction up a bit that way. And then the second is to take a cue from Seven Dwarfs Mine Train in particular, does a great job with projection. And there are some great opportunities, I think, on that attraction for projection effects, particularly the tinfoil volcano. You know, we could get a real nice projection effect volcano there. There are some things that you could do with the, you know, flying silhouettes with projection effects, and maybe even, you know, play on the kind of effects they used with Enchanted Tales with Belle, you know, the magic mirror. How cool would it be to, you know, either exit the bedroom or return to the bedroom, you know, through a magic mirror type window that just sort of opened as you approached it, or at least gave the impression of opening as you were approaching it.
I think the risk with a refresh like that is if it's a simple upgrade in technology, but the basic concept for the attraction is basically the same. I think that Disney has been demonstrating good intent with its upgrades to Pirates, its upgrades to Haunted Mansion. I think something like that for Peter Pan would be good, and I doubt we would have Zazu and Igo in this attraction, something along those lines, where you're really changing what this is all about. So I think we would be. I think an upgrade here would warm a lot of hearts, and you know, there's a reason this is still one of the classic attractions. There is something magical about hanging around and flying there, and if they could do something more engaging with motion, either in the vehicle itself or in the displays that you're going through, that would be great. But I wouldn't, you know, this feels so unique. I wouldn't want them to screw it up too much.
Fair enough.
So how much would you want that? Would you want them to say adjust things like the clock tower and you know the London scene? There's so many scenes in that are really detailed, but I think they're kind of starting to show their age. And so, you know, rather than just updating and adding stuff on top of it or doing an overlay, it seems like there's really an opportunity to change a lot of the fundamentals and put things in that would make it a lot more immersive. I think they could make, and I want to say, a higher resolution version of things. I think the highlighter color paint on different things, just with the black light, doesn't do it anymore. That there's an opportunity to do things like they did with Lumiere and Enchanted Tales as well, where they've got now really, really great movement that could add to the immersiveness.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, okay. So let me ask you this. I'm going to do a quick whip around the panel here, and you've got three options on Peter Pan's Flight. We can keep it classic, refresh it, or replace it. And you tell me, when you're considering this, you know, wins against replacement, the inherent risks of throwing open the door, which do you choose? Classic, refresh it, replace it. And Ryan?
I would refresh it. And the big thing I would do is I would increase the capacity in the boat to make it seat four. So, because I think that would drastically speed up the line. The fact that it only seats three is problematic as well. So I think you refresh it and change the vehicle just slightly so that you can increase the ride throughput and get a lot more people through it in the same time frame.
Excellent point. All right, Nate.
I'm with Ryan. I would refresh. And another thing as far as throughput, I think making the ride longer somehow. You know, that way you're adding more capacity that way as you have more boats flowing through the attraction.
Well, you know, that's a good point, because there is a little bit of room to play with if you're careful about it, because there is that whole bathroom area that was originally reclaimed with the intent of putting, interactive queue in, and it looks like that interactive queue has kind of gone by the wayside, so there's some space there to play with, so that's a possibility. All right, Kevin, what about you? Classic, refresh it, replace it.
I am going to keep it as classic because I'm going to save my money for some other expenses elsewhere in the park.
Okay. All right. So we're going to work our way towards those and bring up the next classic Fantasyland attraction. The next one I want to look at is, you know, among the most basic and most classic Fantasyland attractions. It's in, I think, every Fantasyland all over the world in one version or another, and that is Mad Tea Party. It is a, you know, Q-word classic flat spinner ride. And I'm going to ask Ryan to go first and sort of describe the current state of the classic, Mad Tea Party.
So the current state of it is, and we ride it pretty much every time we're there, it's a spinner ride. It is, I think, one of the opening day rides. I'm not sure if it was opening day at Disneyland. I think it was definitely at Disney World. You sit in a teacup. It's got a little handle in the center, and the teacups are on essentially large metal plates that spin around an axle in the center, and then they have another axle.
Okay. I think we may have just lost Ryan. Or Nate, you want to pick up the description?
let's see. It is a tilt-a-whirl puke bucket.
Okay, so you're in a teacup. The platform itself rotates, and then each of the teacups
rotate.
Okay. Anything else notable about the attraction?
Well, there's a light theme for Alice in Wonderland with the music and everything.
Right, and you've got the big teapot. But it's sort of a design element there, a central element. It moves a bit. And I think maybe what's important about the Mad Tea Party attraction is that the spinning of the teacup itself is controlled by the rider, right? You decide how fast the teacup itself spins while the larger table spins.
Yep.
And so I guess what I would say is where I think we need to start here is to talk about, you know, maybe if you're considering, you know, what could be done with this, what kinds of updates or what kind of replacement would be under consideration for Mad Tea Party if we were to go that route. Kevin, you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, you know, I'm just drawing a blank on what you could do. I mean, I could see how you could rip it out. I could see how you could, you know, leave it as is. I don't know what you do to upgrade this attraction. I don't know. It sort of is what it is, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, any ideas from you, Nate?
It is what it is. The only thing I could think that could make it anything better would be to enclose it and have some sort of projection in there, but that would only add to the sickness of it. Make it a true mad tea party. But
well, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, is that there's a danger to playing up the whole mad theme too much, in that, you know, it's already spinny, it's already a nauseating ride for some people. You know, if you added a whole lot of 3D projection stuff, it could be an ugly scene there.
You don't want to have to clean those screens off.
That's right. Screens are a pain to clean.
As you can tell, this is not my favorite attraction.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, and I guess what I would say is, you know, going back to this concept of wins against replacement, I mean, there is another option here, and that is to ask yourselves, you know, what function does this attraction serve? It's true this attraction is all over in all the parks, but, you know, on the one hand, it's got pretty limited capacity. It's a short attraction. You know, maybe this is space that you want to reclaim for something else. I mean, what else could you put in that footprint? It's sort of an interesting location at Walt Disney World, because there is a little bit of room around it to expand that pad a bit.
Yeah, you know, if you'd asked me, could you take that out and make the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train a little longer, then I would have maybe taken that bet. But given that there's already, you know, that's a done deal already, it is really sort of sitting between like five other attractions. And other than turning this into a retail location or a food location, neither of which make good sense to me, I would say keep it as is, or in the location. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have really a big enough footprint to do another kind of attraction. I mean, you already have a carousel already. You already have Dumbo type attraction sitting right next to it.
Sure. All right. So, you know, I guess because there's not as much to it, there's not as much to go into on it, let's go ahead and you know, answer the question. Looking at wins against replacement here, you know, do you replace it, refresh it, or just keep it classic? And Nate, why don't you go first?
Well, I would love to replace it. I do not know what I'd replace it with, so I would guess I'll have to keep it classic.
Ryan, how about you?
I'd keep it classic.
And Kevin, is it a clean sweep?
It is a clean sweep. Keep it classic.
Yeah, you know, I got to agree. I mean, it's a completely basic attraction, but I think that's its charm. You know, it's the thing that the three-year-old remembers from their first trip. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a place for those, especially in Fantasyland. So I'm going to agree that we keep the Mad Tea Party classic. And we move on to maybe one of the most singularly classic attractions in Fantasyland. And that is, It's a Small World. So we all know, I think, the basics of Small World, right? We've got the dolls from around the world, you know, the unity message of it. It's the slow boat ride with the classic Sherman Brothers song. What are some things that might be done to, you know, do some sort of update, or, you know, what kinds of things might Imagineering do if given the chance to change things in Small World? You know, Ryan, you want to take a stab at it?
So when we visited Disneyland, I actually really liked their Small World a lot better than the one on the East Coast. And I think it's because it's actually maybe a little bit longer, which, yeah, I don't know that anybody ever thought, hey, I want more Small World. But that, I don't know, the way that it was set up seemed to do things better. So I don't know if extending it or could somehow plus it up to make it more enjoyable. It's hard because you don't really want to mess with any of the Mary Blair stuff. I mean, the dolls are classic. It's classic art that's all designed after her stuff. So I'm struggling with ways to modify that. I mean, it's a World's Fair attraction. So it is one of the original things there. It has held up pretty well. They do the seasonal overlays, and now they've got the LCDs going in at the end. But I'm not sure how you can do things to it without taking away from it. I mean, I would love to see some neat animatronics in there, but I struggle with a way to include them that doesn't take away from the overall theme.
All right. How about you, Nate?
Along with Ryan, I don't know what I could do to change it. I know that Disneyland does have a few tastefully done Disney characters mixed in, which would be interesting. And, I just lost that idea. I don't know where it went.
Sorry about that.
We were talking in chat the other day, and, I mentioned this is one of these sacred cows of Fantasyland that I don't think this one could be touched other than, doing something like tastefully adding a Disney character like, Woody or, put a little stitch on the surfboard in the Polynesian area or something like that.
Okay. How about you, Kevin?
Well, I think that change that they made at Disneyland is a little bit of a love it or hate it type of deal. A lot of us do like the additions, but definitely there is a traditionalist community out there, so to speak. One of the things that they've done in some of the other small worlds outside of the United States is they have an America scene, which is kind of nice. They have that at Disneyland Paris. So that would be one potential option. I kind of feel like you either do something very minor like Disney characters, or you as was mentioned earlier, completely redo the animatronics, in which case you're talking about a very substantial change. This is a big footprint in the park, however. So, unlike the Mad Tea Party, if you wanted to put in something like a Ratatouille ride, this would be your optional location to do that. So that would be a consideration.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. This might be one of those areas where it's go big or go home.
Yep.
If you're going to do something substantial to change it, maybe that's when you say, what we really need is, Ratatouille. What we really need is, one of the, a completely different, a Frozen attraction that uses the trackless ride system, something completely out of the box.
Yeah, there's all kinds of space behind this building, too, if you look at a map, a satellite map.
Right.
So, yep.
All right. I guess the question really comes down to, it sounds like everybody's agreed that there's really not so much, refresh you can do here. The LCD panels or the LED panels, whichever they happen to be, are already there, right? We already know there's going to be some sort of projection there, not front projection, some sort of, video display there near the exit. That's a minor tweak that's really already in place. So it sounds to me like it's a question of keep the classic or, get rid of it and reuse the space with something new and refresh, completely different. So, and unfortunately, I think the official, Disney-fed, fully armed overlay is probably not an option. As much as we might enjoy it,
the shooting gallery that would be good. Like combine those two.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. The small world, the fully armed. You turn it into a one of those amphibious landing crafts from Vietnam era.
Or, and you could you can pull from the books, pull from Kingdom Keepers, and have the small world dolls like coming alive and attacking you, and you know that would be great.
There you go. Yeah.
It's like how many what is it, the fight to see how many sixth graders or 6 year olds you could take on? It's like how many small world dolls can one person take?
Yeah. And we can get the whole debate about whether the Disneyland weapons that actually you can hold in your hand are better, or the Disney World ones that are mounted are better.
Yep.
Assuming that that's not an option. Do we keep it classic or do we replace it? Nate.
I'm going to keep it classic. Sacred cow.
Yeah, no, it's a small war. All right, Ryan.
They really need to convert this and extend Listen to the Land to over here. And so this would be the second spot, second greenhouse. That would be awesome. I think it probably has to stay classic in the short term, but I would love, I was mentioning in the chat room, I would love to see one of the Coco Arm or the Kuka Arm rides. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a great spot to put it in Fantasyland. But that would be a big, big change. I think that licensing doesn't come up to what, 2016 or 2015?
I'm not sure. I know that the initial license, from what I had heard, was the initial deal was 5 years, but it may have been extended at some point, so I'm not sure what the current status is. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Because that would give a non-roller coaster thrill ride in Magic Kingdom, and there's not really any of those that I can think of.
All right. Kevin, what about you?
You know, one of the things we haven't talked about with this ride is that it does have a very high hourly capacity, because you can put a lot of people in those boats and get them in there. You know, if I'm taking some risks, this would be some space that I would convert to a more e-ticket style attraction, a la a Ratatouille ride. So I'm going to go big on this one. All right. I've saved my money. I got a little extra in the pocket.
And you've, kept a little aside for the full-time correspondent secretary to respond to the outcry.
You know, if it's Anna and Elsa, I think we could mitigate those, temper the flames a little bit on that.
All right.
Disney fans don't ever get upset about changes.
even if there's already an Anna and Elsa ride in Epcot, we could use another one.
There you go.
And it would only have 3-hour waits.
All right, so as we continue to work our way around, sort of old Fantasyland, there are a couple of attractions that are a little more recent and were not, there at the beginning of Fantasyland, but still sort of predate the new Fantasyland look and feel. And the first of those was maybe one of Disney World's first, or probably Disney World's first, attraction change-out controversy, and that is the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. It's still essentially, kind of a Gen 1.5 dark ride, right? You get a little bit of the hopping effect from the car, but it's still a pretty basic dark ride. So what are some things you could do with Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh to give it more of a new Fantasyland vibe, a more modern vibe?
Well, one of the things you could do is you could clone the version of this ride in Tokyo, which everyone seems to rave about, and it does have a more of a trackless system.
Right.
So that would be one way of dealing with it. Again, upgrades to the animatronic figures, more engaging effects and things rather than just the dark light, that sort of thing. Those would all be sort of typical things you might expect in an upgrade to this attraction.
Sure.
So I think that you could, there's some other Tokyo technology that you could pull over. So Winnie the Pooh is one of the big lines over there. or Pooh's Honey Hunt is one of the big lines. But I'd also look at pulling some of the technology out of Mike and Sully's hide and go seek, that right. type of thing to make it a little more interactive, where you've got the flashlights and are looking for things. I'm not sure how you would tie that into Winnie the Pooh. You could have them going looking for Piglet or something. So I think there's an opportunity to leverage things that have been done in other parks to tell this story in a more immersive way, kind of like Kevin has said.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there are probably even ways to do it within the existing storyline. You know, you've got the blustery day scene where there's the rainstorm and it gets a little dark. And maybe the flashlights on the car only become active in that scene.
Yeah.
Right? And so you're looking for your friends so that you can help them, you know, get to safety on the in that blustery day scene. I don't know. Nate, any thoughts on Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh?
Not really. I just thought of putting a gun on there to shoot the heffalumps and weasels trying to steal my honey.
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting heffalumps.
Heffalumps.
Well, I guess that's not a Disney character. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's clearly some great opportunities, again, even within the current storyline, for projection effects, more modern effects, the Heffalumps and Woozles, the honey hunts, or the honey hunt, the blustery day scene, all of those. The animatronics, the motion is better here than it is at Peter Pan, but I think that there's still some places it could be improved.
You know, it's funny, Aaron. We've been talking a lot about improvements to the attractions, but where's Disney been spending all of its money, and especially this attraction as an example, in the queues?
Well, this is true.
Why aren't we talking about that? Because most people don't care about the queues being enhanced. That's why.
Let's spend billions of dollars on FastPass Plus to keep people out of the queues, and then invest a bunch of money in the queues that we're trying to keep people out of.
Uh-huh. Anyway, let me get down off that soapbox.
Right. I will say that waiting in line to ride Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh is a much more pleasant experience than the, you know, evil, like, cattle chutes that lead you into Peter Pan's flight. That is quite possibly the most miserable queue. I won't ride it without a fast pass anymore. That queue is quite possibly the most miserable queue at Walt Disney World.
So here's what we could have done. You could take the area for the teacups, convert it into a giant playground, and give people pagers for all the attractions in Fantasyland and New Fantasyland. Kids go play there. And so no queues, no need to build a bunch of different interactive queues. It's all done on pager service based on the and you just check in for whatever ride you want to ride.
Okay, so
and
I laughed out loud, but this is essentially applying the, you know, the double Dumbo concept to the heart of, you know, kind of old Fantasyland.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I was going for. Well, it's taking double Dumbo and then what they were doing with Anna and Elsa and what they were doing at Soarin' in that test. I mean, Disney's obviously trying to get people out of line, so why not just say, you know, all right, let's really go whole hog at getting people out of lines and go with a pager service. So when it's your time to ride, we'll give you a notice 5 minutes in advance, so no one ever waits more than 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, interesting concept. Although, you know, we are talking about Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, so maybe we'll go, you know, whole pivot.
Oh, sorry.
All right, so we've talked about some options here. The question now becomes, using our wins against replacement, your personal sabermetric formula, do you replace, refresh, or keep classic the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh? Nate.
Replace. Bring back Mr. Toads.
So reaching back for more
classic. Keeping it classic. Yeah.
Ryan?
I think we need to keep Pooh in the park, so I say refresh.
And Kevin?
Yeah, Pooh was a big deal about a decade ago, but he's still an important character, so you got to keep him. And I say, let's invest a little bit in a refresh.
That's right. I think we all need to invest a little bit in Pooh.
Yeah.
Yep. I thought we were going to make it through without poo jokes, but
some of us did.
We almost got there. Couldn't resist. Okay, so there's one more of those sort of more recent denizens of older Fantasyland, and that's Mickey's PhilharMagic, which is sort of an interesting conundrum because it was one of the early 3D film attractions, and at the time it was really sort of cutting edge. It doesn't feel so cutting edge anymore, and I think Disney even acknowledges that. The attraction is getting a refurb this coming fall, but let's talk about things that Imagineering, given free rein, might do with this Mickey's PhilharMagic. The space, first of all, this theater space, and potentially, what they could do with this film itself. And Nate, I know that this is the one you've been excited to talk about. So tell us a story, Nate.
Oh, I love PhilharMagic. It's probably my favorite thing there, although I do realize it is getting old. The Blue Sky Magic Kingdom podcast. I wasn't able to be there, but you did read my idea for this attraction, which was similar to a Soarin type attraction that takes you through different scenes of different movies, and it could be interchangeable, much like Star Wars or Star Tours.
Okay.
And that was my overall concept of this attraction.
So upgrade the quality of the 3D image, and then upgrade the attraction so that when you're in that theater, you're more a part of what's happening on the screen instead of just viewing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. All right. Ryan, any other thoughts about things you might do with Mickey's PhilharMagic?
Well, I think the third thing that Nate called out was he also pointed out that it needed rewritability, and so the Star Tours multi selection thing adds that to it as well, because every time could potentially be a different experience. This is one of my family's favorite attractions too, but yeah, the pictures awful now. The special effects are kind of dated, and Disney has such they have access to a much bigger song catalog now than I think when they started with this, and so they're really not doing themselves any favors by leaving it with the song catalog that they have. These Aladdin and Lion King and these other these songs are great, but for my daughter who's 8, those are movies that she doesn't really watch. She's from a whole different era of Disney, and there's none of those songs in it.
Right. She's looking for the Tangled and Frozen and all of those songs.
Yeah, and we don't need 8 minutes of Let It Go, but there's. There are opportunities for other songs there, I think, to bring them in so that it's more engaging for a younger audience, particularly because I think the whole advantage, like I said before, New Fantasyland is great because everybody can do it. And so that means this is one of the things that all the little kids can do, and then you're going to play songs that many of them – it's before their time.
Sure. And Kevin, how about you?
One of the other things you could do with this space is something that they did over at Disneyland, where they had this Fantasyland fair, and they converted the stage that was already in that location, and they do this sort of like two-man minstrel retelling of Beauty and the Beast and Tangled, and then they have one or two of the characters from those films, face characters come in and be part of the show. And it's very interactive. It's very funny. The kids get to scream and yell huzzah and all kinds of things like that. And you know, I agree. I don't think anyone's going to say keep this attraction as is. You know, if you're going to go something different, that might be a direction here that I think might be a little bit more organic for the rest of New Fantasyland, which feels that way, and not so, you know, old style flat cement type castle stuff like Magic Kingdom sometimes can be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that I think would be really interesting here, because it is a larger theater and there is some space there, is that I think that in some ways it's an opportunity to, you know, really kind of stretch the creativity and include all these pieces. You know, I'd even say, you know, take it a step farther back and, you know, let's include some animatronic here. You know, maybe in somewhat of the way that it's done in Hollywood Studios with Muppet Vision 3D, where, you know, you've got some actual three-dimensional animatronic pieces, and you know, Imagineering has come so far with the modern animatronics. It's really gorgeous work. Blend that with live performance, with, you know, 3D film, bring all those pieces together, and what you get is the best of all of these worlds. You know, you get the kinetics of live performance and moving animatronics. You get the brand new 3D technology that's engaging. You get the new music, and you can use this concept of, you know, there's so much available to the material. You can have more pieces than you have time, and, you know, like in Star Tours, shuffle in pieces. It increases rewritability, lets you make use of that deeper catalog, lets you, you know, gives the performers a little room to riff because they know what's coming next. I think that that is a great opportunity. Again, it's a great space to be able to do that kind of thing. All right, well, we've talked about some things we think they could do here. Let's talk about what they should do. Wins against replacement, what do you do? Keep it, refresh it, replace it. Ryan.
I'd go with refresh. Drastic refresh, like a la Star Tours 2 refresh.
All right, Nate?
I'm refresh.
And Kevin?
I like the idea of an homage to classic Disney characters, but let's do a complete rehaul of this location. Let's add all those elements. Let's throw it all in there and make it our true D+ e-ticket.
All right. Well, I think we're in agreement. I would say a major refresh is due, you know, almost a new attraction, but obviously you're going to reuse the theater space and still maintain the concept of, you know, some sort of three-dimensional technology and involving the people in attendance in the show. All right, we've got one last attraction I want to talk about pretty quickly here, and that is Prince Charming's Regal Carousel, because in my book, renaming an attraction does not mean it's been refreshed. So very quickly, you know, it's a carousel. What more can you say? What might be done to, you know, play with this from an Imagineering perspective? Any thoughts, Kevin?
Well, Imagineering never got fired for adding Disney characters to an attraction, so that's an option that you could do here. You know, I want to be the one to ride, you know, insert your favorite animal character.
Well, or, you know, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because I hadn't even thought about this, but, you know, my friends over at Disney Film Project are often talking about the fact that Disney needs a toy line that is, you know, the Disney horses. And why not put all the various horses, you know, Maximus and I forget the name of Pegasus from Hercules,
yeah.
And, you know, all of these horse characters from the various Disney films. I think it'd be terrific to have, you know, a carousel comprised of Disney movie horses.
I want to ride on Cuzco, Emperor Cuzco in llama form.
There's lots of things you could do there. Yeah.
Nate, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I like that idea. Add a reindeer, too, to get the Frozen action in there.
Ah, oh, that's right. Sure, got to have him.
And the moose.
Well, so the whole story, the updated storyline around the carousel is that this was Prince Charming's, like, training for jousting thing, wasn't it?
Or right, he was training ground.
And So is there a way to make it more like a jousting training thing? I mean, that you could safely do with laser lances or I don't know.
That's an interesting thought because, you know, that's the real historical basis for carousels is it's the whole brass ring thing, right?
Yeah.
There's supposed to be a brass ring there to try and grab, and you're developing the eye-hand coordination to, you know, grab the ring. That is an interesting thought, you know, whether there's a way to do it so that you're not, you know, poking somebody's eye out.
Yeah. So we're going to give you all these 8-foot long wooden
sticks, and we want you to poke them toward the little ring while off the spinning horse.
Or they're going to have metal detectors at the exits for all the people who've got brass rings in their pockets, right? Yeah. Trying to take home a souvenir.
But it seems like you could do some sort of virtual thing like that to make it seem a little bit more. I'm thinking if you've been to Downtown Disney, to Disney Quest, they have a lightsaber type game. So you could have kind of an attached a laser lance that you could raise up that would be electric and kind of work like the light gun for a Nintendo. You just have to find something to bounce it off of.
Right, right. Interesting thought. All right. Well, I know we've got people who were pushing it on time today. So let's go through real quickly on the carousel and refresh, replace, keep it the same. Ryan.
Probably keep it the same. I like to think of ideas, but I don't think I'd spend the money on that.
All right. Kevin.
I guess I wouldn't I wouldn't spend the money either. I'd keep it classic.
And Nate?
I'm going to keep it classic because they'll probably just add another dance party or something.
Well, I like my idea that I just came up while we were sitting here. I'm going to refresh it. We're going to put the Disney horses on there. And you know what? We're going to recoup the investment with all the scratch we're going to make selling the, you know, Disney horses collection in the gift shop across the street. Because you know that no kid in the age, you know, between the ages of about, you know, 3 and 10 is going to walk out of the Magic Kingdom without going and getting whatever horse they rode on the carousel from the gift shop across the street.
I'd love to see your ROI spreadsheet before making a final decision, Aaron.
I have to have a P&L statement before we can.
All right. Well, you have heard our crazy musings about what we think the wins against replacement might look like in a reimagining of classic Fantasyland at Walt Disney World. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. Heck, you can even visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/DizDadsPodcast. Until next time, I've been Aaron Ripmaster with Kevin Crossman.
I do really love the kids. Don't write me hate mail, please. Good night, everyone.
Nathan Trent.
Good night, everybody.
And Ryan Dreikler.
Bring back the sword and the stone.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.
This has been a Wizard of Oz production.